So we now turn our attention to a very big topic indeed, autoimmunity. And this introduction is fairly chunky as well. So we're going to be taking a bit of time on this one, and there's quite a lot of reading for you to do. It's important and worth it if you know anybody who have or yourself have any autoimmune disease, because these are famously complex, famously difficult to manage. And you may think this is very cheeky that we can think we can do something for them, but as I hope you will see, we do have some realistic strategies that can make and do make a difference and don't fly in the face of common sense. So let's have a general scope first and what we mean by autoimmune disease. We've got a list of them at the end of this article, but they include things like rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease, psoriasis, MS, as familiar examples. But less familiar are things like chronic fatigue or syndrome or ME, which has got a large autoimmune condition, long COVID, the same, and other post-viral syndromes, Lyme disease. And there are a range of other very sometimes mysterious and certainly very disabling problems which are most likely to include some autoimmune problem. So in autoimmunity, essentially our immune system, particularly the adaptive immune system that we introduced earlier, has taken to attacking ourselves, and they attack particular parts of the body. In the case of rheumatoid arthritis, it's the joints. In the case of psoriasis, it's the skin cells. In the case of something like lupus, it's the whole system. But essentially, the immune system is turned on us, and this is a sort of civil war in a way. And it was one of the very first challenges I faced myself when I came into this world. How, if I'm using natural approaches, does one separate two natural functioning parts of our system? I mean, the immune system is doing what it thinks it's supposed to do. This seemed to be a really challenging quandary. In the case of conventional medicine, there's no doubt about it. The obvious thing to do is to tell the immune system to stop. And so you have various things to suppress immune functions, and these include, and famously, the big introduction after the Second World War was steroids, which transformed the lives of people who would otherwise be quickly crippled and in severe pain with things like rheumatism and so on. We now have a range of these anti-inflammatory drugs, steroids like prednisolone, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen, and there's stronger ones like azathioprine, methotrexate, hydroxychloroquine, and cyclosporine, which increasingly can, increasingly powerful, but can make a difference for sufferers when all else fails. And we're not going to argue with those. Sometimes they are rarely needed, and we often in practice find ourselves working alongside them. But you know, they are powerful drugs, and they all have quite significant side effects. So if we can find ways of reducing their need, then let's go for it. So, you know, the question is, what else can we do? Well, the first question that I always come up to, do you have good days? Autoimmune diseases, famously, at least when they start, are very variable, and some they come and they go, and there are obviously days when you don't have them at all, and days you can get less of them, but it's still the case that you get better days and worse days. And so the question I would have and ask myself here is, what makes a good day? Because, you know, other things being equal, that's the body pulling itself around, demonstrating, yes, it can manage the situation. So can we, in effect, mimic or make these good days more frequent? And that gives us a starting point and the reason for doing it. So how good does it get is one of the first questions. And it always, as we keep saying about the immune system, comes back to the point that we're not just dealing with the end result. We're not just dealing with the joints or the skin. We're dealing with all the background factors that can play into this broad concept that we've identified to call the immune system. So we really, when we're taking a case of autoimmunity, we roll our sleeves up and look at everything we can find. And in this article, you'll see in diagrams reasons why we do that. And what you'll see here are illustrations of the principle of the two main stages that we can identify in the onset of an autoimmune condition. So that in the first diagram, we can see the first stage, which is tissue damage. And here we have the idea, which was introduced along earlier in the series of articles about tissue trauma, the excessive destruction of cells leading to their contents being opened up into the circulation when they shouldn't be, or the cells disturbed in some way or other, so that the cells start becoming targets. So we have injury and trauma as one major consequence. So any old wound, any damage done, any illness or sickness in any part of the body, particularly we're thinking of things like the digestive system and the inner organs, can be the first sign of trouble. We used to call it the primary lesion. So we're looking anywhere in the history, anywhere in the past that might help us to identify where this started. An important clue is often a viral infection, because viruses can change the cells and make them more targets. So we're looking at any previous viral infection, and often there's plenty of them around, but we're looking for ones, for example, that may have been more harmful than others. We're looking for any signs of inflammation at all, from any cause, and background factors like pollution can be severe provocateurs in leading to this damage, to the necrosis that we see happening when tissues aren't properly broken down, the beginning of the immunological threat. So we're looking for these. We're looking for the consequences of that trauma, and that leads us on to the second stage in the generation of autoimmune disease, which is formed in the second diagram in this article, and that's what we call immune disruption. So we start off with tissue jamming, generating danger signals, as we see in the article, which then need which can usually be handled by an intact immune system. But if the immune system has been disrupted in some way, then that is when danger really comes in. So the disruption can occur from, again, viral infections, or other infections indeed, but particularly viral infections. What happens there is we get what we call mimicry, where the infective organism actually mimics or looks like the target tissue, the joint or the skin or wherever. And so the immune system attacks the target, the host tissue, instead of, or as well as, the infective organism. That's one reason, one way in which this can happen. One of the most prominent ways, however, is dysbiosis, where we get upset of our normal germ populations, the microbiomes that we introduced in other articles. It comes back to the point that, you know, healthy microbes, the majority of the germs we live with, are actually protective, because they help to reduce these upsets in the immune functions. Anything upsetting the digestion, the gut wall, and other barrier breakdown can also lead to immune disruption. We add off this the obvious point that some people are genetically programmed to have these problems. They runs in families, incidentally, particularly down the, in many of these cases, down the maternal line. the wrong sort of food, a lot of stress, hormones and other background factors can all lead to this immune disruption. So this all comes down to the fact that you read this article that when we're faced with a very complex autoimmune condition, we go back to basics. We look to see wherever clue there is as to where these problems can have originated. We look in particular at the gut and the gut wall, the digestion, because so many autoimmune problems begin there or are provoked from there. As you'll see, antibiotics have a lot to answer for in this case because of their disruption. And I make another point about proton pump inhibitors, PPIs such as omeprazole, which are handed out very frequently by doctors with the first hint of any upset in the stomach. And we're increasingly worried about the effect that they have on the health of the microbiome, and in particular in allowing transfer of the mouth microbiome down into the gut, what we call gut oralization. And we are seeing these PPIs as an increasing threat to our immune health for that reason. And other medicines can also be disruptive, particularly picking up on the ibuprofen type of medicine, which again, particularly when it's associated with PPIs, can be quite disruptive of these immune functions. So, you know, if you're suffering from an autoimmune disease, ask the question, do I really need this medicine or can I get away without it? Simply to reduce some of the stresses. Also check out the digestive remedies in our Power of Plants immunity post, because we keep coming back to the importance of the gut and the gut wall, particularly the digestive functions, in protecting ourselves against further trouble in autoimmunity.